Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist. The Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee with our head coach, Chad Timmerman.
Hi, everybody.
Was that better or worse?
I'm confused. That's much better.
Good. And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And we are live from Rosslyn, British Columbia for Single Track 6. If you haven't been listening, you can listen back to the previous three episodes where we did a preview and then we've done a recap from Stage 1 and Stage 2. We're racing a six stages mountain bike stage race.
Sort of.
And by we, you mean you.
Yeah, that's true. I'm racing six. It is still Single Track 6 for me. It's called that, Single Track 6. And it's known for being a really technical mountain bike stage race. It's got gnarly downs, and we knew that, but the gnarly ups certainly have caught us off guard too. But it's been awesome terrain.
I think the gnarly downs caught us off guard too. Everybody I talked to has said this is not representative of what this race has been in years past.
Yeah, so it's definitely, I think, pushing the limits of XC, but it's been awesome for me personally. I've loved it.
It pushed the limits of my bike.
It did.
With this rider.
Yeah, that'll happen. So today was stage three. It was a different stage, and everybody was kind of, you know, I guess relishing this stage because it was all downhill, and I'm using air quotes there, all downhill is what a lot of people said, but it actually had... It had more downhill than up, substantially more. I think 2,300 meters of descending, but it still had 1,500 meters of climbing, and it was 35 kilometers long. So it was still a lot of climbing, right,
Chad? Climbs were hard. They're technical single track and just lots of people on the trail, especially in my case. We'll get to that, but the climbs were legit. There was no... easy sailing whatsoever. And I was in my lowest of 2-3 gears pretty much the whole time.
Mm-hmm. What did you look at your head unit and see what the max grade was you're hitting?
In those moments, I was kind of seeing cross-eyed. But I know that there were moments that were as steep as the steepest things we've done, if not steeper.
Yeah, for sure.
30?
So, yep. Yeah, we're talking over 30%.
Little grippier though when we were in the trees and on the rocks. I mean, you had to surge over some little rocky patches on the steeps sometimes.
Yep.
But it was tackier and a little easier to keep traction.
Yeah, so and a lot of that, I think, Chad's perception of the climb is very different than mine. And I think a lot of that has to do with the gearing, because I found the traction to be marginal at best in those situations because I was having to turn a bigger gear.
Yeah. So let's go over your gearing one more time. What do you have right now?
So I have a 30-tooth chainring in the front. And then I have the SRAM 11 speed 10 to 42 cassette in the rear.
And 42 is your big boy, whereas I have a 50 gear. So Eagle was XXO?
You have Eagle XX1.
XX1.
Oh. And you go 12 speeds and you go 10 all the way up to 50. Mm-hmm. And you have a 30-tooth chainring in front as well.
Yeah. So someone on Instagram asked, or somewhere, they asked, why isn't Jonathan taking Nate's Eagle? Because my bike's broken.
It's a good question.
And I said, I offered it, I think, 2 or 3 times yesterday. And John said, nah, it's going to take a long time to do it.
Yeah, and I didn't necessarily turn it down. I just didn't want to do it yesterday. But yeah, we're changing that.
So then, yeah, Jonathan today came in and goes, hey, can I have your Eagle?
Yeah.
And I checked my bike and it had an organ donor card on it. It was stuck beneath the saddle. So now it can donate parts to all of you guys.
Yes.
And luckily there's mechanics here at the, like, mm-hmm. that you can just bring your bike to, and they kind of gave us an estimated cost, and they're going to switch it all tonight, bring it to tomorrow's stage, both bikes. And my bike will be without a drivetrain, and Jonathan's will be, man, I hope they wouldn't change the cranks, would they?
They didn't mention that, and
it'd be
glad
the same.
They don't need to in my case. The chainring I'm running works with Eagle.
Yeah, but I mean, it wouldn't. You wouldn't be SOL because it's the same tooth. No, it'd be less. I'd be a 40.
Yeah, they'll so find a way to make it work.
You'd have even more gears.
Yeah, they'll find a way to make it work.
Because so I'll have to take out a chain. That's just something interesting to think about. Is because you'll have a bigger front chainring.
Mm-hmm.
So that means
we have the same size front chainring.
Oh, 30.
Yep, 30 and 30.
We're all 30.
Yep, we're all 30. It's easy. I dropped down from a 32 to a 30.
That's right. I get so confused.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's all the same.
It's all the same. You could use my SRM.
Yeah.
If you wanted. It wouldn't really matter.
It wouldn't matter.
Yeah, but there's no reason to change it.
Yep.
Just cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty straightforward there. That's taken care of. And really the reason that I'm switching up that gearing, I thought that maybe a 32 would be enough, but I can't stress this enough. These climbs are steeper than any climbs I've ever climbed.
Yesterday we were talking and... We were like, we didn't know they put this deep climbs in mountain bike races.
Yeah. Usually, like, you avoided those. Those are like service roads, and you went away from them. But also today, the single track, it was just common logic, I guess, or not logic, but common practice in the mountain bike world is to make single track trail not too steep in a lot of sections unless it's a descending only trail. The reason for that is obviously going up makes it better, but also when you make a trail really steep, a lot of the time it's difficult to manage runoff for with rain or anything else like that, and they can erode the surface of the trails. I saw definitely some evidence of that on the trail that we rode today. It was really steep and there were spots where it was trenched out from rain a bit. So that's usually what they do. But in this case up here, nope, no worries. They just make you go straight up the hill.
There are some sadistic people here in Roslyn.
There are, yeah.
So this stage was different as it was a quote-unquote time trial. It was staggered start, yeah. And they let you guys off in groups of five. So yes. Jonathan, let's talk about you first.
Five or bigger.
Yeah, they let you go in bigger groups?
Yeah, I saw groups coming through with as many as 10 and some with eight. Either way, once they got a little into it, the groups started getting occasionally bigger.
They limited us very specifically, five.
So, Jonathan, you were either in the fourth or fifth group. So what kind of strategy, sixth group, okay, and then it was immediately in the single track. Mm-hmm. What kind of when you start then, who gets in the single track first? Is it by order of
scramble to it?
You didn't start instantly into single track. We did like a weird almost like practice loop thing on some fire road, and we went into after maybe 200 meters or so, maybe 150 meters, you were into single track. So really it was like a whole shot scenario with XC, and it was somewhat needless. It was
people almost like a cyclocross really start.
Yeah,
you had a wide open start, only five guys in your case.
Yep.
And then just
funneled in quick.
Yeah, so it was a small loop.
Mm-hmm. On yours, what kind of strategy did you employ? Did you try to be first? Or
I did. I tried to be first going in just to avoid dust. And I reconned the first little bit before we started with a short attempt and a measly attempt at a warm-up beforehand. And I looked at that and I noticed that there was a lot of overgrowth and it was hard to see a lot of stumps.
Super, super tight. Just enough room for you to squeeze your bike through.
Yeah. So because of that, I wanted to make sure that I was without dust if I could. So that way I didn't hit any pedals and cause a mechanical, anything like that. That said, I was second wheel going into the forest. Another guy just sprinted in at the last minute to get ahead. And that was okay. But the thing is, after that, this is something that I've learned and it just continues to be reinforced. This is a 6-day stage race. Our group started extremely hard and I let them go. After we got onto the climb for a while, I let them go because the pace was too hard.
So how did you pull over to let them by?
So yeah, yep. When they were faster than me, I just went, pulled off the trail and stopped. And then jumped right back on.
And you pulled off a significant amount off the trail, right?
Nobody had to maneuver away from me at all. They could just carry on the trail.
So how hard is too hard for the, so the climb was it's an hour long climb to start, right?
Yes, it was long.
It was really steep.
It was 7 kilometers 7K. Going up. And
really
we
slow
climbed.
7K though. I mean, yeah. In terms of
this is grade. Really important strategy stuff. How early in the race, and then what kind of wattage were you doing where you looked down and said, you know what, this is too hard. I got to let these guys go.
Yeah, I was looking down at my normalized power after about 2 kilometers in, 1.5 kilometers in, and I was at 340 for my normalized power.
And that's
my threshold is right at 300. That was way too much.
And you're heading into probably 2.5 hour day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was way too long. Way too high.
The initial climb is an hour long, and that's probably, 5-7 minutes in?
But it's not the sort of climb that relents at any point. So sometimes you can hit the first part, gain position, get yourself where you needed to be, slotted in with riders who are going to ride at about your pace and not blow you up. And then you settle and you ride it out.
He was already in second position though. He couldn't.
In a small group. There were still 25 guys up the road.
Yeah. And something that's tricky with this, or 30 guys, yeah. So something tricky with this too to keep in mind is the fact that these climbs are so steep at those little moments of what Chad meant that where, it isn't 35%. It's still steep and it's still hard. So it's not like you can drop below, at least for me, I couldn't drop really below threshold. Was just to stay upright.
Tomorrow.
Any place on there to maybe get a little bit of recovery was over with in a handful of seconds, 2-3, maybe 5 seconds at the most. I don't even think there was a 5 second stretch where you kind of ease up.
Right. So it looked like if you were to graph the power profile, it looked a lot like billets, really high intensity over unders that were you're sitting right at threshold, then after that you spike way high above, and that could last for up to 15, 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds, maybe even more in some cases, and then you drop back down to threshold. It was really rough. So I backed it off, and I watched people go, which was super hard to watch them like ride away from me, especially
because you know that they're like around your finish time.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought, okay, right now, and my legs are feeling real flat and just not like they're, what I mean by that is just, if I ask my legs to respond, they don't want to respond. They just kind of, you know, chug along. So I knew that that wasn't a smart idea to just try to push through that and crack myself early on. So I just stuck with, tried to stay as well, as close as I could to within myself, using air quotes. And then after that, I figured I can pick these people off on the descents. And I know that. So then
here's an important question. Did you see those guys later in the day?
Passed all of them but one.
There
and
you go.
More and plenty more and more people that were ahead of me as well.
See, that's the problem, because when they said it was going to be a time trial start, I thought, you know, this is a lot of people, so I didn't realistically think they were going to send us off in 30-second waves, but I thought maybe they would do 10 seconds and let everyone just roll one after the other. Even sending them off in groups means that there's still going to be that race for position, even if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You still fight your hardest to stay in there, even if you know the pace is too fast. And it's like what the system just feeds itself, because you got the other guys doing the same thing. Maybe one or two of them is actually capable of holding that pace all the way up the climb, but as you saw, none of them actually were.
Yeah, not, only one. And the thing is, though, I liked that dynamic. That was unique. I've never done a 5-person start like that. A team time trial I've done before on the road, but this was not a team time trial. And I thought that it was good because it still gave people that chance to feel like they're trying to compete with each other, which I feel played into my favor. It's another situation where if you base yourself off of the performance of others rather than staying within your own limits and capacities that you know, it's just not going to work out in most cases, especially in the middle of a 6-day.
But even that said, it's super hard to be in a group of five, especially if you're in front of a couple of those guys, and to ease up on the pace. You're forced into it.
Yeah.
You hang on to it for as long as you can until you have to pull the plug.
It hurts the ego, but it's possible.
Absolutely,
it's,
does.
And it's it's mentally hard for ego. But if you think about it, like yeah, it happens all the time in triathlons. I start and I see some people I should be with, and we go out, or even I just did a hill climb, right? And my buddy who I want to beat, he's going out, must be 400 watts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hitting 320. I'm like, well, 320 is probably too high for me.
No, we saw it on that first day.
Yeah.
Same
but
thing.
But it's better to, I mean, I don't think you're advocating this, Chad, but you said like you hold on for as long as you can. I'm like,
I'm saying, you know, that's the tendency. I'm not saying that's a proper strategy.
Exactly, yeah. So the proper strategy, if you have a power meter, is you can look at it and say, Jonathan knows, what was it, 340?
Yeah.
He cannot sustain 340 for an hour.
Yeah. Nope, especially in the middle of a race.
Yeah.
Like, I have to look at my threshold and know that I'm probably at this point not going to be riding directly at that, right?
See, the thing is, you don't even need to look at your power meter to tell you that. You knew full well that pace was not something you're going to hang on to for an hour and then ride for another hard hour and a half afterward.
Yeah. It all depends, too, with time trials, because at the beginning of a time trial, it never feels like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
until you get a little, Jonathan was feeling it though, and he probably looked down and was like, cool. But I just want to illustrate the point of what good tactical decision he made to be able to just back it off and then get up the whole climb and do the whole course faster rather than saying, I need to stay with these guys, when there's no aero benefit either. If it was a road race and maybe there was a shorter climb and you're like, they're all going to slow down and you're going to be at the group, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
But
no aero benefit here.
Even then, plus, if you're pushing that hard, there's still, it's just not going to pay off.
The other benefit for Jonathan is he has confidence and has great downhill skills, and it is hard to do a downhill when someone's right in front of you. So he could push really hard and then go into the single track downhill and not be able to gain any time because he's limited by those other people. But now if there's a, let's say it's 60-second gap on the first descent, he can gain all that back right there.
Yeah, and that was the case. I was really... this was a different scenario than the previous 2 days where I had to work my way through people on day one and on day two because of missing a turn or actually going off the trail. But today I didn't have that. I was riding with people that were relatively close to my speed, and that was very nice to have, which was the opposite for Chad. Chad had the opposite of that, but the benefit for me ended up being that when on the descents, I could catch up to people quickly and then I could pass them quickly. And this is a lot of this depends on them. When you're riding at the front at the pointy end of a race like that, a lot of these people, they understand the etiquette and they're understanding the fact that, hey, somebody's faster. every time I caught up to somebody today, they just pulled directly off the trail. There was never a, oh man, this is close moment where we had to squeeze through. I moved to the side when it was needed. They moved to the side when it was needed. It was really refreshing. So, and what that made for was a safer race for us because it allowed everybody to ride at the own speed, their own self-selected speed, but it also didn't cause those scary moments when you're trying to fit two people on the single track in a dangerous spot. So that was a big benefit for me today.
So Chad, to recap, Chad had the first day, major cramps. Second day, he took it off. The third day, we actually, speaking of cramps too, we talked about hot sauce. We ended up getting him these little like fireball suckers.
Candies, just kind of a happy accident, really.
Yeah, you can check that out on Instagram. Go on there and you might be able to see on the Insta story if you check this.
Didn't get to try them out though, because fortunately I didn't cramp. So, but as probably a result of my poor seating. So skip a day. I had kind of a dismal finish on first stage. Didn't do the second stage. This put me almost dead last. There were about 300 and change riders starting in front of me, all levels. So I stopped counting my passes at somewhere in the 80s. I just couldn't keep up with it anymore. And I was focusing a little too much on the numbers, not enough on the trail too. So I was actually calling people. Occasionally I would ride by someone and they'd be like, hey, Trainer Road. And I would say, hey, 72 or something. I mean, I was still trying to keep the numbers.
Yeah.
I eventually gave up on it. But the fact was it, the downside is I had to work around a lot of riders. That was strenuous in some cases, limited my pace in a lot of cases. It is what it is. Upside of it is it forced me off the bike far more often than I would have, forced me into a slower pace far more often than I would have gone that slower pace. So it kind of panned out, I think. I mean, all told, I wasn't pushed into that same dark place that I was on that first stage because I was kind of regulated a bit.
You know what I think it is, Jonathan? I wasn't racing. There's no pressure from Nate, but this is a good, he just rolled his eyes. If you guys couldn't hear that on the podcast, that was Chad rolled his eyes. But I think the interesting thing is, so Chad, you're in the back and I heard that at first you're kind of bummed that you're back there, but then you just kind of said, you know what, this is going to fun ride workout day and not a quote unquote race day.
Yeah. My priorities rearranged a bit. So it just went to being, you know, fun at the top of the heap, fitness next, and skills, which did get to work on skills, and that was fun too. Yeah. By then, things had thinned out a bit. So the downhills, they were still kind of tough. First couple downhills, there were still quite a lot of people in front to pass. And then, but I'll tell you a tactic for that, much like on the uphills, where you give people a leash. Same thing on the downhills. If, you know, we learned a braking technique with Lee where you really wait, you know, you kind of pump and wait the rear tire and really get on the brakes for a second, and it slows you down in a hurry. And scrubs off a bunch of speed, and then you let off and you roll into it again. And I would give someone that same leash, roll up onto them, do that braking technique, give them a leash, roll up onto them. And it kind of worked. It was another form of regulation, kept me from taking anything really too fast because I couldn't wind up that much speed. Gave me kind of a pace car so I could see what was coming. I could hear brakes squeal if there was a tight section. I mean, I had the advantage of someone giving me a heads up on what was to come. But at the same time, I didn't get to descend at the rate I wanted to until the final descent.
Well, Chad came in and goes, that was the best day ever I've had on a bike. And you had no cramps.
That final descent in particular. The day itself was a good day, but that final descent as a combination of the new skills we've acquired, having a day up here already and being prepared for something that would be a little harder than I'm used to. Just everything kind of came together so that last, what was it, 7K?
Was 7K.
Yeah.
There was a continuous descent with very, very minimal interruptions. It was like just uphill over a little rock outcropping for 15K.
Yeah, but the last seven, they shifted us onto a trail that was just the most fun I've had on a bike yet.
Yeah.
So for 7.5K, it was utter bliss. And it rolled to the finish line, so I knew this was the end of it.
It wasn't like a smooth bike park at all. It wasn't stuff that was just like, you know, perfectly manicured.
Oh, no.
It was loose, rough, and fast.
And very fast.
So it was, and I genuinely loved it. It left me crossing the line in like the best mood ever, right?
Yeah, they said on the description sheet that we'd finish with a smile or something like that. And they weren't lying. I mean, it was hard to not smile.
Everyone but me.
Yeah.
So Chad came in and goes, this was totally within your skill level.
So many times over the course of it, I thought, oh my God, Nate would love today.
I am definitely having that. I'm so happy for Chad that you had a great day, but I definitely have the fear of missing out right now. And I'm sitting here with a taper And even the first day, like I held back some of all the climbs thinking I had 6 days. I have all these like carb and food. I'm just staring at it. I got peanut butter panda puffs to eat, but I'm not going to eat them.
You know, something that, so Nate's or Chad's description of the stage and the descent is very different, or Chad's experience is very different than mine. We were talking about this a little earlier. Forgive me. For me, there's a lot of dust still.
There's a lot of dust in us right now.
Yeah. For me, I felt I had actually my, I think the trail was less, had less like very challenging aspects today than others, but I think it was because I was uninhibited by other people. I had a lot of time alone today while I was making up ground on people. So my speed was very high on a lot of the descents, and as a relatively high. And as a result, I have my scariest moments, my loosest and most amount of close calls on this stage. The rock was just like, there was no such thing as a round rock. It was all extremely sharp razor rock. So something that I did to manage that, whenever you see really sharp razor rock, it's really important, number one, to look ahead so then you can pick your lines and not get in a spot where you're sandwiched between some sharp rocks and you're going to pinch a tire and cut one. But I also, I know this sounds silly, but I think light. And what I mean by that is I'm constantly looking for ways to unweight my bike and then a place to touch back down and weight my bike where there aren't really sharp rocks. It doesn't take a lot of skill or anything else like that. It's just basically
it's that whole light, heavy flow.
Yeah. Idea. It's how you read a trail and you look at it and you think, okay, really sharp rocks there. I should probably unweight a bit and I should be light over those rocks. And then after that, there's a little spot where I can put some weight down again and then bounce over some more.
It worked kind of well. At some of those stretches, there was big shaley jagged sections into it was really rutted out, just a hard switchback, but the dirt was loose in it, so you were light over those rocks, heavy into that turn, light over the next stretch of rocks.
Yeah,
it was rhythmic,
because I was shocked that I was toward the front of the race, but I only saw one person with a flat tire, which was amazing to me, because I was riding over this thinking, how in the world am I not getting a flat tire? Because some of the rock coming in and out of the turns especially, it was just so sharp. So I think two things with that. Number one, like I said, the technique of trying to make sure that you're light and heavy, not just panic and let things take over and just kind of bounce your way through things, but really kind of take control. Then the other thing is we all have reinforced tires, right? We all have tires with what Maxxis calls exoprotection, and pretty much every brand has a heavier duty casing option that they have for a tire. And we have that option, and I was very grateful.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weight penalty, but man, on terrain like this, it's well worth it. Yeah.
So before the sharp rock thing John was talking about, his point was it was a little hairier, so he had some hairy moments on this because he was his totally. High speed.
Going faster.
And Jonathan, what was your top speed today?
48 or 43 miles an hour.
Yeah, either way, I'm not doing any of those. Yeah. So where Chad had a great day, I think I would have been slower than Chad, so I wouldn't have had those. So I know Jonathan's trying to make me feel a little better that, oh, it's a little scary, but if you're going really fast.
Well, this is me relating, and perfectly, I genuinely mean this, in an unbiased perspective. Like, I think that you could have handled everything on the trail today, but if you get out of sorts, just the consequences were so high because the rocks were so sharp.
That's a good point, because just like with your early crash in stage one, it kind of took your head out of the game for a little while. There were a lot of opportunities to have a pretty bad crash, way worse than anything on stage one.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
There was so much more speed.
Yep.
And you don't like the fast fire road stuff. There were a lot of opportunities. It wasn't fire road for sure, but you were carrying those speeds.
Yeah.
The brakes are fine.
So it was quite fast.
Yes, as long as it's not like loose, like the first stage where it was something that was like that. It was 20%, 30% down.
It was loose.
We had a stretch just like that though.
Yeah.
I mean, that one stretch, I thought we were back on that part of the course, that very first downhill.
You guys are making me feel better. Scare me.
There were moments where I genuinely had some, I'm sure if I looked at my heart rate monitor, you would see some big spikes because they were, I feel like this was, if you were to do like a legit enduro, this was like a lot of sections on this trail were like a normal stage of a regional enduro wouldn't be the hard stages, wouldn't be the gnarly technical stages.
So you still rank those descents as enduro descents and not cross-country descents?
And today was definitely on the line, and there were certain parts that were very cross-country.
Okay.
But some of the spots were pretty gnarly and rocky, and those I felt like kind of leveled up.
Kudos to Single Track 6. And I haven't said this yet because I haven't felt like I was in enough informed of a position to say, you know, this is a great race, well-organized, after only one stage. But done a stage, observed a stage, and then done another stage today. And I have to say, these people have their stuff together.
Yeah.
Everything has been just right.
I agree. Everything's very well organized.
Super well organized.
We had like a pretty tricky like logistical operation today to get everyone's bikes about a 20-minute drive up the road from where we are.
Talking a lot of people too.
Yeah.
Multiple hundreds.
Bikes. And then after that, we finish outside of town and they have to get us out. And they were so good at getting people out of there really quickly. I thought that that was a really refreshing thing to see, rather than just letting the racers hang out at the stage finish.
Yeah, it was seamless.
Kept guiding people, hey, shuttle's up there, go up there. And that was really...
And the volunteers everywhere, everyone we've encountered, whether they're drivers or at aid stations or the cooks or the mechanics, have been just the nicest people, fully capable, very good at their jobs.
Yeah, it's been great. So
let's move on to stats. Oh, wait, Jonathan?
Yeah, can I cover one thing before that? Yeah. I changed up my nutrition strategy a bit this morning, and I feel like it was beneficial for me. I'm not sure. I can't say what it would have been like, you know, otherwise. But yesterday I felt like, we mentioned the fact that I just stopped eating at a certain point in the morning when I was eating breakfast before the race, because I just felt like it was too much. I feel like I stopped at, you know, a good point, but I still felt like I had a lot. I had some food processing while I was on the line. And today I actually ate significantly less. So I had the same size oatmeal that I've had in the past few days, but then I just had a couple eggs and that was it. And then I knew that, okay, chances are you're going to need to eat on the bike. So I carried a little extra nutrition with me. So I carried an extra Clif Bar, the coconut almond butter ones, they're so good. And then I carried some extra Scratch Labs chews. And I ended up eating one or two of those Clif Bars on the trail. And I ended up also eating a good amount of those chews. So I actually feel like it was better for me to do that rather than go in with such a big breakfast. That's not normal for me. I usually do better just like a big breakfast than carrying on, but I don't know if it's the fact that we're recovering in less than ideal conditions with the heat or whatever it is, but I don't feel like I can deal with as big of a meal as I normally do.
Well, we had a lot of pizza last night too.
We did.
You had a giant pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a recovery drink afterwards?
Today, no, I did not.
Yeah, and I wasn't there to help you because it was a different start. And
it would have been really, complicated. Been,
So you did get back, though, the pre-race meal. Your Swanee, we made blueberry, papaya, and banana fruit salad, and then whole wheat pasta with plain marinara sauce.
Yeah,
and great. I think that's a great, like, after, you know, it was like a 90 minutes after you raced.
Yep. Yeah, it was awesome. So getting into stats, we should cover that. So once again, the stage was 35 kilometers long and it had 1,500 meters of climbing, which is actually the same amount as yesterday, even though everybody said this will be an easy downhill stage. It's still a lot of climbing. So I ended up doing it in 2 hours and 36 minutes and 7 seconds. And my normalized power was 213. And I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, that's crazy, that's super low. But prior, on the first climb going up, and I can't separate this because I don't have a great app for doing this, but looking at it, it looks like I'm somewhere probably around 275, 280 watts up the first climb. And then after that, there's so many huge sections where I'm not pedaling at all. There's no power going through the pedals. But trust me, there was a massive amount of energy consumption going on in the body just trying to manage the terrain at that speed. So I feel thoroughly exhausted after that stage. In fact, I've already taken a nap and I feel like I need another one, but only normalized power of 213.
Chad?
I did it in, I think, 322, if I'm looking at this right. My average power was way down at 107. Normalized power was at 168. Yep. I feel like all that's accurate. And again, why we don't use normalized power to really tell us about much of what goes on in a mountain bike race.
Yep.
Because, I mean, there was a heck of a lot of descending. And those descents, every one of those that I finished, I felt like I needed a nap after each one of those. They were long and abusive, but fun as can be.
This illustrates another point, though, Chad. I bet if this was on day one and you had a clean shot at all the climbing, your normalized power would have been much higher because you were slowed down by so many people. Really?
I don't know, because on the first day I made the mistake of trying to keep too hard a pace, overwhelm my muscular system to the point where I was, you know, cramping catastrophically, and it ruined my race. So I think maybe there's a balance to be struck there. Maybe I went a little too easy today because I was forced into it being behind a bunch of riders, mm-hmm. and because I was being cautious, because I've never ridden with this much pain in my muscles over the course of, it didn't clear up. Typically you start a little heavy, a little sore, and you ride it off in the first half hour or so. Mm-hmm. It remained the whole time, and they're dreadfully sore right now. So we'll see how this goes in the days ahead.
So I have the key question now. Will you race, or will you show up the start line tomorrow?
No, I had never planned to, especially not now.
Yeah, so, but you are going to do, well, you, I shouldn't
the,
say
the
you
plan.
Are.
I'll see how I feel on stage five. And I plan loosely, more than loosely, to do stages 5 and 6. I had never planned to do 4.
Yeah,
stage 4 is the queen.
Day on, day off. I like that approach. And the problem with day on, day off in this case is it would be do stage 5, skip stage 6. And I like the look of both stages 5 and 6. And I have a feeling it's going to be really hard to skip the final day.
Yeah. So stage, yeah, that's going to be a rough one. A couple other little interesting tidbits. It says that I burned 1300 kilojoules. Keep in mind that's through the pedals. But man, I know that I did a whole lot more than that.
So that's way less, because I think the first day you were 1800 kilojoules.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
There's just so much descending.
Oh, it was rough. You know, I have a massage scheduled for this evening, and I'm thinking of having her just work on my arms. So I know that sounds crazy in a bike race, but the descending is so demanding that my arms are completely worked. So
what was the total ascent?
Today it was 1500 meters is what I have.
Okay, and then your descent, because I've got descent that's substantially more than the ascent.
Yes, which was the case. So 2300 meters of descending is what I have. So it's a lot of descending. Another thing that I guess was reinforced to me, the top guys in the front did not... There was nobody at the aid stations when I went through. There were volunteers, but no riders stopped at the aid stations. Those riders, a lot of the riders in front of me also had Camelbacks, even the fastest guys.
I noticed that. I saw Rotem, and he had, I don't think I've seen him with a Camelback yet, and he had one today.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of riders are recognizing the fact that on a race like this, when it's this long and the conditions are so rough, that it's best to just carry that with you so you have more water. And the aid stations have been well stocked here, which is great. Mm-hmm. But if you're racing for time and really want to, you know, make sure that you're if you're at the pointy end of the race, you just have to do what makes you competitive, which is carry enough stuff so that you don't have to stop.
So tomorrow we're going to wake up early, transfer, and they're going to take us right to the start line. And I don't know how our luggage gets to the hotel.
So we have to bring our luggage, part of our luggage, down tonight.
They don't even know about all this.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's just
a mess.
A bit of a process.
It's not a mess, but it's just we have to go to the start, then the finish is someplace else, and then come back. It's a mess for Chad and I, because hopefully we don't have to wait around.
Well, if you're thinking about racing your bike, it's a bit of a mess, right? Because you have a lot of things to take care of.
Stressful, right?
Yeah, exactly. So for me, I know that I have to pack up everything in our room, pack up the groceries, pack up the bike bag, do a lot of different things that...
It's the same challenge everyone else is facing who's doing the 6 days.
Certainly is, yeah.
You have two Swannies here.
I know. I could just order you guys around. That would be not very nice.
Pack up some of the food, and I'll pack the bike bags, and your bike's gone. All I have to do is your personal stuff, and you don't bring much.
That's true.
You are Mr.
Minimalist
traveler.
So, but it certainly is something to keep in mind, is the fact that recovery from today is probably going to be less than a normal day. Also, tomorrow is the queen stage, and it's a rough stage.
Beast. I'm so happy I'm not doing it.
This is something we talked about yesterday. I think that stage two doesn't, tomorrow's stage doesn't have any black descents.
It doesn't that I know of.
And that was actually the stage I'm looking the most forward to. And John and I were just talking about fear yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I obviously have fear for speed, high speeds, technical descents, like getting hurt. Mm-hmm. But like epic hard stuff, I'm really good not getting in my head for working hard. I'm thinking back over the last day. During an Ironman, I felt that way. And then during a marathon where I didn't... It was CIM with 30 mile per hour winds and just raining, pouring, and I really hadn't trained for it. I didn't care. Mm-hmm. That I just gave up. Like, I walked a lot of it, but I've done probably 300-400 races in my life, and I don't I've never had that like fear of hard stuff.
Yeah, and if I can try to explain this further, because it's not necessarily that we're afraid of hard work, right? You've done a lot of hard work going into those events. It's just it's a fear of, I don't know what it is, but just having to push through something extremely difficult and letting yourself down, at least in my case, that's what I feel. Like, and when I say letting myself down, it's not relative to placing to other people. It's not relative to like, you know, my numbers weren't on. It's getting to a point where I let the circumstances or something else conquer me and I end up backing off because of that. And that's always something that I put a lot of pressure on myself. And once again, it's not based on to place first or whatever it is. It's just to make sure that I'm really giving it everything that I have at all times, and I'm not letting the circumstances override that. And yeah, it's something that I feel like I've kind of come to peace with, but I struggled with for years.
I have that problem in training, and especially with running and swimming. I've had it a few times too, where you don't give it your all in a workout, and then afterwards, you know, and I get that feeling of guilt.
Terrible.
Yeah, but in a race, I talked about it a little bit on day one, but I like changed to a different person, and I am so, you guys, I don't even think you guys even know how competitive I am, but I am really competitive when it, like when it's game time.
Competitive, you know, I mean? To other people, or competitive to your, in relation to your goals, or what is it?
Both.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. It could even just be like, it doesn't have to be Chad up the road. It could just be the next person. When I'm in a competition and I feel like it's like a fair competition. If I'm playing, I'm thinking like beer pong with my friends. I get into it.
Yeah. Like, everything.
But it's, yeah. I mean, if it is, if we're eating dinner, I don't have to be the first one to eat and go, I win, because there's no race going on. Although sometimes I'll mention it. I know what you're saying of that feeling, and it's a bad feeling when you bail on, like, let's say a trainer workout early and you know you could have finished it and you didn't because you gave up.
Oh, it's the worst.
It feels bad.
And you know what's really hard for me is that I usually remember those moments with great clarity on race day, right? It's easy to focus on those failures, but I've really, this race has challenged me to be in a positive mindset. The climbing has been so difficult for me. It's just been so steep. So it's been really challenging, but it's been great because I feel like I've already growing with that. I'm becoming better at taking charge of those situations with my head and being more positive. And yeah, I mean, it's been really helpful to put myself in a situation that's way over my head in terms of the climbing, I feel. And
wow, that's crazy, right? Coming from Jonathan. Just give you guys a
It's way over.
I think it's just the nature of back-to-back, you know, stage races where every day is just a little more challenging than the one before it, simply because the fatigue only mounts. There's no point at which you can catch up with this.
Yeah,
you simply have to try your best to hang in there.
Yeah,
and not succumb to it.
That's part of it, and at the same time, though, it's also the course. Like, I've never actually raced a situation where I'm not. I feel like to ride at the pace that I want to ride at, I'm not fit enough on this course. That's crazy. And that's like, for me, I've never had that. And it's been a hard pill to swallow, but I think that I'm like, to carry the pace that I want and also to carry the pace that my gearing demands right now, up some of these climbs, I don't have the fitness to back it up. It brings me down to ground zero.
But yeah, Chad's talking about day after day. The first day was like that too, right?
Totally.
When you had a full taper and you were good. Yeah. So are you excited tomorrow for Eagle?
So much. So
yeah, I'm excited for you too.
And I'm not expecting to then suddenly light the world on fire. What I'm expecting to do is to be able to feel like every climb that comes up doesn't conquer me, that I can actually depict my own pace.
This is like this is an advertisement for, it doesn't have to be Eagle. You could do this with a double too.
Totally. Yeah. If you just, you know, making sure that you're, and once again, I really thought that my equipment was good for this, but I had no clue. And I think most people here that I've spoken to, none of us had any idea that it was going to be this steep.
No, so we had nothing to base it on though.
No.
Like, again, this is not reminiscent of what has happened in the last, at least the 2 years prior to this. There might've been a year.
Or any cross country race Jonathan has ever done in his life.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody, absolutely. The consensus is that a lot of these downhills are full on downhills.
Yeah.
And the ones that aren't are enduro downhills.
Yeah. So Jonathan, how many bike races do you think you've done in your life?
I mean, probably close to maybe 200. I don't know. And, a lot. Or and, 150 probably to 200. Yeah.
And did these last 3 days had the three steepest, like were they the steepest? And did they have the steepest downhill?
In a cross country race? Yeah. There's only one race that I've done before that's been gnarlier in terms of descents than this. Just one. And it was a local twilight race of all.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. But then that brought us down a full legitimate downhill trail. So.
Yep. So that's just putting in perspective.
Yeah, it's really rough. But that said, like Chad mentioned, it's a pretty darn cool event.
More perspective on it, though, is I talked to a guy on the shuttle back, the bus, and he compared this to BC Bike Race and said, in years past, this has been an inferior little brother, and now it's right up with it in terms of technicality and difficulty.
We were reading on the website, because I was looking back, and it says, an authentic mountain bike experience for single track six. This is definitely like I call this a mountain biker's mountain bike race.
Yeah.
Like if you consider yourself a mountain biker and you love downhills this is for you.
Totally.
If you are a triathlete and just getting into mountain biking, don't, I mean, yeah, maybe come and check it out or come to Roslyn. Or I mean, it changes each year though, so you don't
That's
really
true.
Know.
Yeah, it changes. And next year, from what I've heard from a lot of people, they're saying that the regions that they're going to, it's probably not going to have, in some cases it will have terrain like this, but it's probably not going to have terrain like this throughout.
Great.
But this guy that I was talking to even said that the BC bike race has a couple stages that are comparatively easy. Yes. You know, there's a long flat stage and then like a short steep but only like 20k stage.
Yep.
So they at least mix it up with some friendly stuff, this is just one day after the other.
But it's a heck of an event, and I'm looking forward to the personal, the physical growth that I'll have in terms of fitness. I'm looking forward to, you know, the emotional and personal growth that I'll get out of this just by going through something so hard. I think that it's going to make me a better person.
And I can bet you money that I'm going to bounce back faster than Jonathan will, because he's going to run himself down to nothing. And then he's going to have a much longer road back than I will with my day on day off approach.
But he's also like 15 years younger than you.
And still, it's still going to take him longer to bounce back. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Because
he's burying himself 3 days in. He's got 3 more days of this. I'm sure it's going to take him a while to come back from this.
And here's the interesting thing. I haven't been burying myself out of my own, you know, accord. It's just
the gearing.
The course has demanded it. Yeah. So that's what it's been.
Courses are brutal.
And I'm sitting here wishing that I had 6 days of this, and I'm like so, so bummed. Yeah. But I just want to say this point one more time. It's not that the bike race is too hard. It's that I can't even experience it now because I broke my bike. But it's just be aware that the downhills are technical. They're not.
Oh, yeah.
They're not easy.
Before our mountain bike training session that we had with Lee, you were very much a beginner mountain biker, you know, and this is, you're coming to a world-class event. So it's been, but you stepped up quite a lot.
I stepped up.
Yep, quite a lot to where I think that you could manage this stuff. You know?
I thought I was going to. Oh, well.
So let's talk about tomorrow's stage really quick. Just the stats. It's 45 kilometers long. The longest stage that we've had or that we'll have in relation to that, I think is 38 kilometers. So or 35 kilometers, which is today.
Yeah.
So tomorrow will be 45 kilometers and 2,000, nearly 2,100 meters of climbing. So we're getting up to 7,000 feet, nearly 8,000 feet of climbing. That's going to be the longest day, the day with the most climbing. And there's a section, and it's called Sweet Sally. That's the climb that we have to look forward to. And I think that it's ironically named. I doubt it's going to be very sweet. Looking at it in relation to the other climbs that we've had, it looks just as steep, if not steeper, and it's very, very long. So I think that we have 12 kilometers tomorrow of climbing, just, you know, continuous stuff. So it'll be tough, but I'm going to give it 100%, and hopefully we can learn some new things after going through such a huge test like that. If you have any questions for us, please submit them. We'll go over them in the next episode, the ones that you've sent in relation to this bike race. Whether it has to do with mountain biking, whether it has to do with stage racing, anything like that, send those in, and then we'll cover that in the next episode. And possibly even further episodes after that. And I don't want to fully let the cat out of the bag here, but we may have a special guest with us on the last stage, which could be pretty interesting. Yeah.
What about Instagram? Chelsea will.
Please. Yes. Yeah. Chelsea, our marketing director, she's listening, I'm sure. Go to Instagram and check out. We'll have stories up there that will be, check out the Instagram stories. You'll see all the different content that we're doing. Those only live for 24 hours. So just make sure you check in regularly and you can check that stuff out. And you can learn more about hopefully the stuff we're learning. So thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.